Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome to this week's episode of Money Tree Investing Podcast. We appreciate you joining us today. We're really excited with the guests we brought to you guys today. My name is Kirk Chisholm, the host of today's show. Today we're going to be talking about annuities. I know you've all got your thoughts about annuities, good, bad, or indifferent, but today we brought on the perfect guest to talk about it. His name is Stan, the Annuity Man Haycock. Before we dig into some of these Wall Street secrets with Stan, I want to talk about Betterment. Are you looking for a better way to invest during market turmoil? Consider Betterment. Betterment is a robo-advisor that uses time-tested principles of modern portfolio theory to help you manage your wealth and reach your financial goals. With Betterment, you don't have to use the stock market to consistently build wealth. For more information, visit our website, moneytreepodcast.com/Betterment. A lot of investors use Betterment, but it doesn't mean it's the right fit for you. Do your own research. Check out moneytreepodcast.com/Betterment to see if Betterment is the right fit for you. Today, we're going to be talking with Stan, the Annuity Man Haycock. How's it going today, Stan?
It's great. I mean, it's as glamorous as it can be if you're in the annuity business, right? And that's all I do, annuities.
Glamorous and annuities. Who would have thought?
I know. Well, you know, the bottom line with annuities, and I think that what separates them, and when a person gets on TV and runs an ad that says, I hate all annuities, that's like saying, I hate all restaurants. It just makes no sense whatsoever. And you can't say that if you hate your pension or you hate your Social Security. Annuities are contracts, period. They're not investments. They're sold as investments, but they're improperly sold as investments. They're transfer of risk products that primarily solve for four things. And the acronym that I've come up with to explain those four things is PIL. P stands for principal protection. I stands for income for life. L is for legacy. And the other L is for long-term care. If you do not need to solve for one of those four things, you really don't need an annuity. And by the way, annuities are not growth products, so never buy them for that.
As you can all tell, Stan is a nationally recognized annuity expert, and he's also an annuity consumer advocate, which I think is really important. One of the reasons we brought him on the show. We really like his honesty and transparency about annuities. Let's start a little back here. How did you get started as Stan the Annuity Man? Because that's a pretty good moniker you got there.
No one plans to do that. No one wakes up in the morning and goes, you know what? I'm going to go into the side of the financial business that really is the cuss word, which is the word annuity. I didn't plan on doing it. I was a Morgan Stanley, Dean Witter, Payne Webber, UBS advisor for a long, long time. Didn't like the direction of that and just kind of left the business. Long story short, heard a really bad Saturday morning radio show with some huckster selling index annuities, called in and completely destroyed the guy on air. From there, people started calling me, and the rest is history, and that was over 10 years ago. I only specialize in annuities. I only specialize in fixed annuities, and I represent all carriers and licensed in all 50 states. I didn't plan to do it. It just kind of happened, and the ironic thing about the annuity space, and for people out there that's been to the Bad Chicken Dinner seminars, there's really no filter or governor on the sales message. You literally can say what you want to say, unfortunately, and it happens. And I think annuities get a bad rap just because people are buying them for the sales pitch instead of the underlying contractual guarantees that are within the policy. At the end of the day, you're buying a contract, which is called a policy, and you're transferring risk to that carrier to solve for a specific situation. That's not how they're sold.
Yeah, and I think that's an important concept, and I want to get back to the bad chicken dinner later, because I think that's something that I think people need to understand. But before we get in deep, and there's going to be a lot of complex terminology we're going to be talking mm-hmm. about today, and I think it's important that people understand that first, because I know that I have these people talk to me, and it's like speaking pig Latin, and I understand this stuff. So, you know, and I'm sure most of that is actually deliberate, but let's start talking about, like, what is an annuity? Like, how did they originate? Like, what was the original purpose of the annuity?
They originated during the Roman times as a way to pay a pension-type income to the dutiful Roman soldiers and their families. That's where they started. Those were immediate annuities, single premium immediate annuities. Up until in the 1950s, that was the only type of annuity sold in this country. In 1955, the first variable annuity was introduced, and then all hell broke loose in 1995 when indexed annuities were introduced. They should be primarily used for income, whether it's income starting right now or income starting at a future date. That's not how most of them are sold. Most of them are sold with potential market returns, upside potential, that kind of nonsense. If you're looking for market returns, you should never, ever, ever buy any type of an annuity. If you're looking for income or principal preservation or maybe some long-term care issues or legacy, then an annuity might fit. But that doesn't mean it fits for everybody. It really comes down to two questions, and I have everyone answer this. Number one, what do you want the money to contractually do? Underline contractually. So the first one again, what do you want the money to contractually do? Number two, when do you want those contractual guarantees to start? From those two answers, I can either tell you, A, if you need an annuity at all and what type, and then B, then we can run quotes with all carriers to show you the highest contractual guarantee. It's really that simple.
Interesting. You mentioned that you do fixed annuities, but you also mentioned variable and equity index annuities. Can you define the different types? Because I know this throws a lot of people.
Sure. Let's kind of go through them pretty quickly. The variable annuity is the number one selling annuity right now in the country. It's the one that has the mutual funds. They call them separate accounts inside of an insurance wrapper. And they were really put on the planet in the 50s for tax-deferred growth. They've turned into fee monsters. The average annual fee for the life of the policy of a variable annuity is around 3%. Okay? And they're high commission products as well. Side note, all commissions with annuities are built in and hidden from the client. You can ask your agent what it is, and they need to tell you. But a lot of agents say, well, you know, it's a net transaction to you. That is true, but the agent is getting paid. The indexed annuity is a fixed product, but this is the one that's being sold improperly. This is the one that everybody is going to try to sell you and jam down your throat because they're getting paid about a 7 to 9% commission. Sometimes it's a little bit lower, but that's average. It's typically a 10-year product, and it's a call option on an index, meaning that you're going to get a portion of that upside, but it only locks in on a specific day. Bottom line is this, and never forget this. In 1995, index annuities were designed to compete with CD returns, and that's exactly what they do. So you got variable annuities, index annuities. Then you have the income products, which are the immediate annuities, which is for income starting within 30 days to a year. Deferred income annuities, which are an immediate annuity that you can defer farther out. You have QLACs, which are used within IRAs. And then you have what's called a MYGA, which is a CD product with the annuity industry. That's kind of the basic six or seven products that are out there. But again, it really comes down to what you're trying to solve. And there is not a one-size-all solution with annuities. You have to be very specific what you're trying to do, whether it's income or legacy or principal protection. But the two top selling annuity types in the country are indexed and variable annuities. Just by coincidence, those are the highest commission products out there.
Yeah, it's funny. I heard a stat a long time ago, and I wish I could find the source of this because I think it's fantastic. And I think it was that of all the insurance sold, 93% of it is by agents, of course. 92 or 93% of it is whole life. And of all the agents that sell whole life, 98% of them own term on themselves. Right?
There you go.
I wish I could substantiate that. I've heard that a few times. But you know, it's the same thing with annuities. I've heard this concept that annuities aren't bought, they're sold. Right?
I think the complex ones are. I mean, literally, I tell people, if you can't explain the annuity to a nine-year-old, no offense to nine-year-olds, you should not buy the annuity. There's five people on the planet that understand indexed annuities. I'm one of them, okay? I've written a book on indexed annuities. But I'm not a fan of them in most cases unless we are attaching an income benefit to it for future income. But from the standpoint of just accumulation, some of the biggest misleading sales pitches you'll ever hear in your life are with indexed annuities. You'll hear stuff like, market upside with no downside. Well, if that's the case, then our Fed needs to just buy indexed annuities, right? I mean, if it sounds too good to be true with annuities, without exception, every single time it is, without exception, there are no exceptions. These are contracts. You buy an annuity for what it will do, which is the contractual guarantee, not what it might do, which is the agent sales pitch.
So you don't think Warren Buffett owns equity index annuities for himself?
I'm going to probably go out on a limb and say, no. Okay, he does not. And what's happening in the index annuity space right now, which is disturbing beyond belief, the carriers are running algorithms to back test for returns, and then they make up an index name out of midair and then sell it to the public.
Yeah. I remember the first sight of this that I saw was, I think it was in 99. I had a client at the time who I inherited. I was at UBS or Payne Webber actually at the time. And the guy came to me, he's like, yeah, I just, this insurance guy just sold me this annuity and it offers me up to 10% a year, but it won't get less than 0% of the year. And I was like, oh, that sounds pretty great. Let me read through the contract. Of course, it took me 2 weeks to figure out what half of it said, but I looked at it and said, all right, I figure what they're doing. At the time, the indexes were quote unquote averaging like 12, 14% a year, because that was in, you know, 99 when everything went up. Mm-hmm. And what they were figuring is, well, we'll make the difference, right? We'll make the difference, whatever the index does compared to our guarantee. That seemed to be reasonably decent at the time. I haven't seen anything close. Everything I've seen since seems like, just like you're saying, they're just back testing random things. And they're saying, this seems good. There's no way we can lose. The customers may, but we can't lose. It looks good on a marketing brochure.
Well,
is that pretty much how it goes?
It's worse, actually. With indexed annuities, the majority of the contracts that are out there, the annuity company can change the way the gain, supposed, potential, hypothetical, theoretical, non-guaranteed, back-tested gain, they can change how that's calculated at their discretion every year, period. In other words, you buy a 10-year product based upon this back-tested number, but you're really buying a 10-year surrender charge with a one-year understanding of what the returns could be. That's insanity. The other thing, too, is the Bad Chicken Dinner Seminar Index Annuity sociopath will say, and you're going to get an upfront bonus. Trust me, listeners, there's no philanthropist at insurance companies giving money away. If they're giving you an upfront bonus, they're taking something away from the contractual guarantee. They have the big buildings for a reason. So they're not just giving money. So people will call me and they'll say, hey, Stan, I got a 10% upfront bonus and it's growing at 8% per year. First of all, the 10% bonus is monopoly money, okay, unless you hold it to term and they take things away from the contract. And number two, the 8% that a lot of people refer to, or 7, Jimmy Carter type yield, that's what's called an income rider, which is monopoly money that can only be used to calculate income. So there's a lot of misleading word game semantics going on out there. And the other thing you need to know about index annuities, it takes about a week, possibly two, to get licensed to sell them.
Yeah, you're from the same broker-dealer side that I am, and they're pretty good at coming up with word games. I feel like the annuity industry is like the brokerage industry on steroids.
They win, and it's unregulated. See, the index annuity space, fixed annuities, are regulated at the state level. So you have 50, it's like herding cats. You have 50 cats out there and no one's looking at anything. They're trying to look, they're trying. But at the end of the day, if someone runs a national ad, who's going to enforce that? Okay. Variable annuities are securities. So you have to have a securities license to sell them. And they are regulated by the SEC, NASD, FINRA, whoever you want to talk. And there's arguments, you know, about that, but at least they have some oversight. Indexed annuities, for all practical purposes, do not have oversight. I really believe the true value annuity types out there are immediate annuities, deferred income annuities, QLACs, and these MIGAs, which are CD types. They're very simplistic, easy to understand, no annual fees. People say, well, their fees are high on all annuities. No, they're not. They're high on variable annuities, and they could be high on indexed annuities if you attach riders to them. But if you're buying simplistic transfer of risk income annuities, SPIA, DIAs, MIGAs, QLACs, there's no fees. They're transfer risk. And you say, well, what's my return on investment on that? I really don't know until you die, right? Because they're basing the payment on life expectancy primarily. So you're transferring the risk to pay them for the rest of your life. And what we typically do is structure the policy that if you die, 100% of any unused money goes to your family. So the evil annuity company doesn't keep a penny, even though they're on the hook to pay you regardless of how long you live.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the concept of transfer of risk, which I think is really important. I think a lot of people don't understand, like, you know, the concept of insurance or, you know, annuities in a similar vein is really about risk transfer, risk management. So let's talk about that, because the insurance companies are effectively taking on the risk for you. So what are some of the risks that are inherent in annuities or annuity type products that people should be concerned with?
It all comes down to claims paying ability. And, you know, annuities are not backed by FDIC. Each state has what's called a state guarantee fund. It's illegal to actually bring up the state guarantee fund in any type of sales presentation, which pretty much gives you all you need to know. That's never been tested. It's there, But at the end of the day, annuities are confidence products, and there's a lot of self-regulation within the industry. So it really comes down to claims payability of the carrier. And on my site, standtheannuityman.com, we give away what's called a Comdex ranking, which is the compilation of the four rating services, Standard & Poor's, AM Best, Moody's, and Fitch. And then Comdex takes those four rating services and then applies a score from 1 to 100, 100 being perfect, of the carriers. And we update that every month. But at the end of the day, you're buying the claims paying ability of the carrier. So you have to understand who that carrier is. And fortunately, with my background, kind of like yours, Payne Weber and all these places, I do know bonds, I do know balance sheets, and we do due diligence going in and looking at the internals of how they're buying bonds, et cetera. But the risk is, can the company back up the claims? Can the company back up the contractual guarantee?
Yeah, and that's a good point, because you've been around for a while. Mm-hmm. I know that, I mean, for the last 10, 11 years, we haven't had a recession. So we have a whole generation of people who don't know what that looks like. But during the global financial crisis, all the banks pretty much were dead in the water. But for whatever reason, which I know, but you know, the insurance companies did not succumb to the similar challenges that the banks had, because they're regulated by different rules. But of course, AIG was AAA rated, the one of whether it was two or three companies that are or were, you know, they had their own problems. So I guess the question I would ask is, what happens if an annuity or insurance company fails? And, you know, because there are obviously risks in here, we're basing it on the credibility of these companies. Like, what would happen in that circumstance?
Anarchy. You know, people ask me all the time, Stan, what happens with when New York Life goes out of business? And I'm like, I'm in the food aisle at the grocery store punching you in the throat for the bread. That's what happens. Executive Benefit Life, which is about 30 years ago, some of the old timers in the audience will remember that. That just kind of tells you how long I've been around. That was the first real big carrier that kind of went out and had some problems. From that, they've cleaned things up to where there's a lot of self-regulation. I call it the annuity mafia, which is, and the industry hates, they hate me anyway, but they hate when I say that. It's really the big boys, the big, huge carriers that everyone knows their name, they run the big commercials on TV, kind of overseeing and buying up any people that might have problems. Because annuities are confidence products. I tell people all the time, if my mom misses a payment, then the annuity business is over, because she's going to be on every TV show and say, they stole my money, and it's over. So one of the things about annuities people need to understand, they're not smarter than banks. They're just more regulated than banks. That's it. They have to keep more money on hand than banks.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. We had a client who wanted us to look into, drawing a blank on the term here, but basically the viatical settlements, so to speak, like life settlements or lottery winnings. And the question came up, like, all right, here's a lottery winning. They're going to pay it out. What if they stop paying? I was like, well, then there'd be no more lotteries, right? Because it's a confidence game. In governmental terms, it's a confidence game, but...
Well, and those are what you just referred to, what's called secondary market annuities, which I don't recommend people doing right now, because there's some lawsuits pending with that, which is you're buying the rights to payments of people who have been, you know, that got hit by a truck and got awarded a settlement, and they sell part of that settlement off. They're called secondary market annuities, but right now they're going through some big time legal issues, and I've told people just to kind of stay away. It's kind of the viatical world. Once again, and the listeners need to be real cognizant of what I'm getting ready to say. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. And if you're trying to squeeze an extra couple basis points or 100 basis points out of percentage out of the yield, then you're pushing the envelope a little bit. Stay simple. Understand exactly what you buy. And the only true protection that you have out there in the industry of annuities, when you're in the wild, wild west of annuity sales, the only protection the consumer has is if someone's pitching you a product and it sounds really good, write down exactly what that person says, that agent or advisor says, to the T, the way you understand it, sign it and date it, flip the paper around and have them sign and date it. That's all. If you do that, either the pen's going to weigh 1,000 pounds, they won't sign it, or they sign it and you got them, right?
Well, that's assuming that there's enough regulations to do that, right? I mean,
if you sign that and you send that in with the application, that carrier's going to say, no, that product doesn't do that.
Well, I think it brings up an interesting point, because I remember years ago, I had a client ask me about annuity and one that they had, and I looked at it. And I actually called the company and said, hey, you know, I have a bunch of questions about this. I read the contract. It's like I said, it's in Pig Latin. I mean, you can figure it out, but it's like deliberately complicated.
Yeah.
So I talked to the agent, the wholesaler of the product, and I asked them a bunch of questions. They didn't even know the answer. It's like they've created these contracts that most people just, as you said earlier, there are only a handful of people understand them because they're deliberately complex.
But that's not the immediate annuity. That's not the deferred income annuity. That's not the QLUC, and that's not the MIGA, which is the CD annuity. Those four annuities, you know, I could go to your local elementary school and they'll all get it and understand it. By the way, those are the ones I like. I like simple. I like contractual. I like easy to understand. Once we go into that index and variable side, there's so many moving parts and so many definitions that most people, they end up buying it because they trust the person selling them. Don't do that. But if you don't understand it, don't buy it. If it sounds too good to be true, don't buy it. If the guarantees look too good to be true, don't buy it.
What are some of the common riders that go along with annuities that people should either be aware of, either for good or bad?
First of all, riders, the word rider is kind of weird, right? A rider is an attachment that you can choose to attach to a policy at the time of application. So that's the first thing. It's a guarantee that you attach, you bolt it on. Most of the riders out there that are sold are what's called income riders, which is a guaranteed future income stream of which you get to choose when it's going to turn on. That's a good thing, right? The bad thing is people sell that as a yield. In other words, I've got this income rider. As long as you defer it, it's going to grow by, say, 6 or 7 or 8%. Well, that sounds good to people who remember Jimmy Carter interest rate days. But with the 10-year treasury below 3%, there is no genius at an insurance company that's figured out how to get you 8%. That's a fictitious amount that can you use for calculating income in the future. That's an income rider. You can also have what's called a death benefit rider, meaning if you're drinking a bottle of Jack Daniels every day and smoking 12 packs of cigarettes, you can get a death benefit rider that you don't have to qualify for that's going to grow by a percentage that will be left to your heirs. Then there's long-term care confinement type riders. You also can have what's called a cost of living adjustment or CPIU, consumer price index rider, where it increases your income. But let's stop right there. Remember what I said earlier. Annuity companies have the big buildings for a reason. They do not give anything away. Anytime you want to increase to your payment, all the annuity company is going to do is simply lower that initial payment. They don't give anything away. You can customize these products with riders, but they all come with fees for the life of the policy, and they all adjust the guarantees accordingly. That's when I said, go back to the original two questions. What do you want the policy to contractually do, and when do you want those contractual guarantees to happen? So if you say, Stan, I'd like a death benefit and I can't pass a physical, great, let's go do a death benefit rider. So it's really that simple. Annuities are commodity products. Think about when you go buy a plane ticket. When you go buy a plane ticket, you don't say, you know what, I'm going to buy American. That's what I'm just going to buy. No, you punch in the data, it comes up, and you choose the best deal for you. Same thing with annuities. That's the reason I represent all carriers. And annuity quotes last like a gallon of milk. Every 7 to 10 days, they change. So you got to be quoting all carriers. And if some agent says, this annuity is the right one for you, it's the best one for you, Mr. Jones. Translation, it's the best one for them.
Why is that? Why do they sell certain products over others? Why do they have their preferences?
It really comes down to two things. Either they're lazy, they only want to deal with one product, or B, if they sell enough of it, they get to take their girlfriend to France on the incentive trip. A lot of the insurance company is the wild, wild west of incentives. Hey, if you sell enough of this, you can get whatever you want. You can go to Italy, you can drive a Porsche. I mean, there's all kinds of nonsense giveaways and incentives for agents to sell specific products. So have the agent, any type of annuity that's quoted that you need to be quoted after you answer the two questions, have the agent advisor show you at least 3 to 5 different carriers. That'll flush most of the agents and advisor out right there.
Yeah, that's actually a great point, because I think a lot of people just get stuck with one product, or at least when I was in the broker-dealer side, it was always just like the commercials say, I think it was E-Trade commercials, they were great. It was like, put lipstick on the pig and go out there and sell it. Like
That's exactly right. That's exactly. And remember, going back to there, a lot of the agents and advisors aren't really up on annuities. I mean, they choose one, they go sell it to their client base, whatever. In a fiduciary world where you're putting the client's best interest ahead of yours as an advisor, in a fiduciary world where you're showing all choices to the client, that lends itself to the commodity pricing of annuities, whether it be an immediate annuity, a MYGA, DIA, QLAC, whatever, even indexed annuities with riders. You can show 10 different income rider choices and what those guarantees will be, and they'll all be different.
Hey, Money Tree Podcast listeners. We've had a great run over the last 5 years. We've had lots of great guests over that time. Guests like Joe Saul Sehy, Susie Orman, Art Laffer, Burton Malkiel, Peter Schiff, and more. We've had lots of great content, too. Like what happens when somebody steals $500,000 from you? Tax loopholes for the rich. Investing like a billionaire. Why men and women approach investing differently. How to outlive your money. Tax liens, peer-to-peer lending, asset protection, and more. And we've had lots of great questions from you, our audience, as well. And we really appreciate it. But now we need your help. We want to know what you want to listen to. What topics, guests, and content you value most. This is your chance, Money Tree Podcast listeners. We don't ask frequently, but when we do, the door is wide open for you to give us your thoughts. Good, bad, and ugly. What do you want to hear more of? What do you want to hear less of? All this helps to make a better show for you. So many of you have already provided your feedback, and it's going to make an exciting 2019 of great content ahead. We're going to be closing the survey soon, so make sure you leave your feedback now. If having a say in your favorite podcast isn't enough, we're also going to be providing monthly promotions to anyone on our email list. The recent promotion was an overwhelming success. We had lots of positive feedback and input from our listeners. We're going to continue to create great shows for you, and they'll be focused on the content that you suggested. Each month, we're going to have a new promotion. We can't tell you now quite what we have in store for you because we want it to be a surprise, but we know that you're going to be excited. We have some special opportunities that money can't buy. We're excited to bring these to you through the year 2019. But in order to qualify for these promotions, we need to hear from you. In order to qualify, you're going to need to sign up for our email list first. When you do, you're going to have an additional chance to win by completing our Money Tree Podcast survey. Go to moneytreepodcast.com/survey2019 to give us your feedback and the additional chance to win. We'll be posting the name of the winner on our website. So if you entered the promotion, please check the website to see that you've won. We also have great shows lined up in the near future with some special guests that you're not going to want to miss. I can't wait to publish these interviews. They're very exciting. So go to moneytreepodcast.com/survey2019 to sign up, and we'll enter you into our monthly promotion. Thanks again for listening, and remember, invest in your life.
I think you had mentioned in one of your articles prior, you know, our industry has gone through some big changes with the DOL rule has made some big impacts. How has that impacted the annuity industry? Because I know, I believe that was actually one of the rule's targets was the annuity industry. So can you kind of speak to that a little bit?
I wish, yeah, he's talking about the Department of Labor rule that would really regulated the annuity industry, made people act like fiduciaries and held them accountable. There was a fight where index annuities should be registered as securities and the licensure would have to be intact to sell them. The reason none of that went through is that the annuity industry, I always say, the annuity industry is the biggest, baddest lobby on the Hill in D.C. They make the NRA look like pikers. They just don't need the guns. They have money instead. It hurt the industry for that not to go through because what happens is still with the index annuity side, primarily, it takes a week or two to get licensed to sell it. So you've worked 40 years. You get this retirement amount. You go to the Bad Chicken Dinner Seminar. That person standing up there could be a week in the business. The bar is so low in a lot of cases to sell annuities that I don't think the consumer understands that. And I'm not saying people with long-term that have been in the business forever are better. I'm just saying I think when you're talking about people's money, I think there needs to be higher qualifications to talk about it and to advise or recommend products. And with the annuity business, it just doesn't happen. In the fixed annuity business, if you're just selling indexed annuities out there, you literally just need a life insurance license to sell it because it's a life insurance product. It's not a security. So all of these regulations that were pushed to get through to regulate more, and I'm certainly not some person that loves government regulations, but in some cases, you need to do this. This is kind of like, retirement money is like food. You don't want rotten food. You don't want bad retirement advice, right? Because you got 10,000 baby boomers retiring every single day. So for me, I was lobbying for regulation, which is goes against the grain personally, but the industry needs it and still needs it.
What are some thoughts? I know you've spent some of your time to actually help with some of these efforts. Like what would be some of the things that you would do outside of obviously having people have better licensing or oversight? What are some other things that can be done?
This one I'm getting ready to say might cause the threats to come into me, which they always do from the industry, but that's okay. The index annuity industry is going to say market upside with no downside or market participation and start correlating it to markets, then it needs to be regulated as a security. I believe that the index annuity space should be regulated as a security. If I was going to do one thing, I would do that. And that would clean up a lot of stuff out there, big time.
So why don't they regulate it right now? Like, what's the hurdle to do that?
It would, because the industry doesn't want that to happen because it would disrupt the distribution.
See, I took it the other way. I took it that the SEC and FINRA didn't want anything to do with it. They didn't want to touch it. That's the way I
thought. No. It's irrelevant whether they wanted to touch it or not. They needed to touch it for the consumer.
That I agree with. I think from the consumer side, they're the best agencies to do that. It's just, it's such a toxic product. My take on it from what I heard from other people, it's such a toxic product that no agency really wanted to be in charge of it because it's such a, no one wanted to be a part of whatever.
It's gotten more toxic. And I don't want this to be all about index annuities because I want people to understand there's the really good, simplistic, easy to understand pro-consumer annuity types, immediate annuities, deferred income annuities, QLACs, and MIGAs, fantastic. Easy, they haven't changed since inception. They're fantastic. But the games that's being played on the index side with indices being created out of thin air, and there's some current legislation in a couple states out west that they're saying, an index has to be in place for 10 years for it to be included in an index annuity. That's just common sense. That makes sense. And people need to understand, with indexed annuities, that return on that index does not include dividends. So in an S&P index attached to an index annuity, 54% of the returns are in that range are dividend based. So you're basing your return on an industry where you're not including dividends. That needs to be revealed to the consumer. Most consumers don't know that. So my opinion, if I was czar for the day, it would be all about it. What's the benefit proposition that the annuity category as a category has that no other financial product has? It's lifetime income, meaning that it will pay you, these lifetime income products, they will pay you regardless of how long you live. You're truly transferring the risk. It's the only product that does that. But that's not what the industry sells because those aren't the profitable products.
Yeah, and I want to get to some of the four you mentioned as well, and I want to hit a few topics for that. But typically with the quote-unquote sales pitch that a lot of these people use, they talk about hypotheticals. I always look at that and I always cringe when I see the hypotheticals because I know it's...
They should be illegal. They should be illegal.
Yeah.
Back-tested return numbers should be illegal. It's that simple. Anytime someone shows you a number and says, you know what, if you'd have owned this 10 years ago, you'd have made this. You know what, if I'd have done 100 sit-ups a day for the last 10 years, I'd have six-pack abs. Give me a break. I mean, this is nonsense. And I think all back-tested, I call it hypothetical, theoretical, back-tested, projected, hopeful agent return scenarios, anything that's not contractual should not be shown because you know this. You can make those numbers look as good as you want.
Yep. That's how the industry operates.
And I've got clients in all 50 states, arguably the top guy out here. I've never seen a hypothetical come true.
Well, I have a funny, not so funny story, but there's a company which, let's say allegedly, because I don't know where the lawsuits stand, but allegedly this company, I think they're an RIA, but what they were doing is they were backtesting models and using the successful ones every month in their proposals, saying, here's our performance. And apparently they'd been doing that for so long, and people were like, wait a minute, the performance doesn't match my investments. What's going on here? The issue was, it wasn't that they were doing that. The issue was that they didn't disclose it. If they had disclosed it, it would have been okay.
Correct.
I look at that and say, how is that at all helping anybody? It seems so, you know, so wrong on so many levels. But the hypotheticals, I agree. I mean, I think that's something that's a real harm. I mean, I've seen these proposals. Clients put them in front of me and say, hey, this guy presented this. And I look at it and say, what do you think this means? They're like, well, it means I'm getting, you know, 6% a year in income. Like, no, it means that your income is increasing 6% a year, not you're actually getting 6% a year in yield.
Well, and it's bigger than that. It's even bigger than that. I want you to think about this, the people out there listening. If you have an income benefit that's growing, they call them income riders, that income benefit that's growing by a specific percentage, as long as you defer, once you turn on the income stream, it stops, okay? All that means is that the annual fee is increasing by that amount as well.
Yep.
So let's just say for math reasons, your income rider guarantee is 7.2%. And you hold it for 10 years. And when you started, the fee was 1%. And when you turn on the income stream, what's the fee going to be? 2%. Why? Because that income amount that you're calculating the income stream from has doubled contractually, which means that the fee is doubled, and once you lock in that income, then that fee is in place for the life of the policy. So the reason that every agent tries to sell a policy with an income rider is because, A, it's hard to leave that policy once it's on there, and B, it is a boon for the insurance industry. They literally can track increases in fees contractually.
Wow. That's so wrong.
Now you know why I get death threats from the industry, right? I mean, they hate Stan the Annuity Man, but Stan the Annuity Man, and I'm not perfect, but this is common sense. These are contracts. You know, you can't polish them up. They are what they are. So because they're contracts, base your decision only on the contractual guarantee. If you do that, then you'll love the annuity that you get. But if you're basing it on some pie-in-the-sky number that some character is showing you, then you're not going to like it.
Yeah. And one thing I did want to ask before we get into the top ones that you really like is the IRA annuity. Can you speak to that? Because I've seen a lot of these people decide, hey, I'm going to put a variable annuity inside of an IRA, and somehow they think that's a good idea.
Well,
what are your thoughts on that?
IRA, whatever, IRA, Roth IRA, whatever, that's just a structure that you put investments or an annuity inside of it. Having an annuity inside of an IRA isn't a good or bad thing. Having a contractual guarantee inside of an IRA might be a good thing. So obviously you're not going to get double taxation benefits, right? If it's a, you know, annuities outside of an IRA can grow tax deferred with like a guaranteed interest rate with a MIGA. But to put an annuity inside of an IRA isn't always a bad thing if the guarantee is what you need. Is if answering the two questions, what do you want the money to contractually do, and when do you want those contractual guarantees to happen? If you have an IRA and you say, you know what, I need income right now, and I need it for the rest of my life, and I need my wife to be attached to it or my spouse, then an immediate annuity inside of an IRA makes sense. So to me, it's not the structure that it's put into, it's the solution that you're looking to do. And if the solution's income now, income later, or say principal protection, then maybe an annuity type inside of an IRA fits. But you can't carte blanche say an annuity inside of an IRA doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, it's an important distinction too, because I think a lot of people look at it, and what I've seen a lot of people paying for effectively the product they're getting. They're basically paying for the tax deferral, and they're not getting any other benefits.
That makes no sense. Okay, that definitely doesn't make sense.
But, you know, one of the things I wanted to kind of hit on, and I wanted to kind of dive into some of the four that you really like. I mean, certainly there's different pieces to this. I mean, there's the fixed versus the variable part. Let's talk about your top four a little bit, like individually, because I think this is an important point because we didn't really dig into
it
yet.
Let's do that. Income now. Income now is an immediate annuity. It's a transfer of risk lifetime income payment that you can have just on you or joint with your spouse or joint with whoever. Okay. But it's based on life expectancy. It's a lifetime income stream. It can start as early as 30 days from when the policy is issued. So that's for income now. Income later, is called a deferred income annuity, which is an immediate annuity, but you can just defer it. So anything deferred past a year turns into a deferred income annuity. Again, with both of those products, no moving parts, no market attachments, no annual fees. They're straight transfer of risk products that the income stream is primarily based on your life expectancy. Interest rates play a secondary role, not a primary role, secondary role. So the third product that's an offshoot of those is what's called a QLEX.
Well, hold on. So before we get into the QLEX, so basically what you're talking about, the immediate annuity and the deferred annuity, would you compare those to basically like a pension or Social Security?
Those are a pension. An immediate annuity is a pension right now. A deferred income annuity is a pension down the road.
Okay, good. Just wanted to clarify that because I think from the terminology, people will understand pensions and Social Security.
Sure.
So I think it's basically just you're getting a pension. Okay, so go ahead.
The third pension product that I like is the QLEX. A QLEX is a deferred income annuity that you can use inside of your IRA. And the good news about that is inside of your IRA, they're allowing currently, as the time of this recording, to take 25% of your IRA or $130,000, whichever is less, and you can defer that income stream as soon as age 71 to as far out as age 85. And here's the two good parts about a QLEX that separates it from everything. Number one, that amount of money is not used in your RMD, your required minimum distribution calculation. Number two, you can attach your spouse for lifetime income, for a pension income for them. So the three of the top four that I like are pension products: immediate annuity, income now; deferred income annuity, income later; QLEX, income later. And then the fourth one is the CD product. It's the annuity industry version of a CD called a MYGA, multi-year guarantee annuity. MYGA works the same as a CD. It's a guaranteed percentage return annually for a specific period of time, just like your CDs. The difference is, outside of an IRA, a multi-year guarantee annuity, the interest compounds tax deferred, whereas with a CD, you have to pay taxes on the interest annually. Inside of an IRA, they both work the same. You get a guaranteed interest rate. So for the people out there that say, hey, I really don't want anything other than a guaranteed percentage, then you need to own both CDs and MYGAs. And currently, like at the time of this recording, a five-year MYGA is around 3.5% to 4% depending on the carrier. And again, commodity products. And on my site, we list a live feed of the best MYGA rates in the country. So those are the top four that I like. Three are income products, income for life products, and the MYGA is a principal protection product.
So the MYGA is basically, so the MYGA is always interesting to me. So when I started the industry, I saw a few fixed annuities, and I mean, they're effectively CDs. And typically from what I saw, the rates were better than most CDs that I saw.
Here's the rule. 3 years and out MYGAs, 3 years and in CDs. Does that make sense? So I tell people, if you want to do a ladder of fixed rates, you know, you do a 1-2 and maybe a 2.5 year CD, and then you do a 3-4 and 5 year MYGA, and you're maximizing getting the highest rates out there. But they're one and the same product. Now, which one's better? Which one's more safe? The CD. Why? Because it's FDIC insured. But the MYGA is backed by the full claims paying ability of that carrier, and then there are those state guarantee funds that have not been tested. But if you said, hey, nothing is better than FDIC, because F means federal, F means they can confiscate. They can tax us to get the money to pay you. But I love CDs, I don't sell them, and I love MYGAs because they're guaranteed interest products. Now, obviously interest rates are low, but this might be a new normal. And you can't time these things. You can't time interest rates, obviously. We just ladder.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point, too, because, you know, effectively what we're talking about is the same thing if you're creating like a bond ladder. You know, you're trying to reduce the risk because at this time, at least, interest rates seem to be stable. But up till now, they've been rising. And, you know, I expect if things continue to go well, they'll probably continue to rise, which is not necessarily the best thing for bonds, but certainly for a ladder. That's one of the points of the ladder, is to minimize that.
And it's also, the laddering means I'm smart enough to know that I'm not smart enough to time this, right? So you have money coming due all the time in case rates are moving in your favor. You can go lock into a higher rate.
Right. Awesome. Well, I think we've hit a lot of the points here, which I'm appreciative of your time. Is there anything else that we haven't hit that you think would be valuable for listeners to know about annuities?
Let me just do a brief elevator speech of the points that I would love for you to take away. Okay. Number one, awesome. You own an annuity for what it will do, not what it might do, and will do are the contractual guarantees. Number two, there are only two questions to answer to see if you need an annuity, and if so, what type? Number one, what do you want the money to contractually do? And number two, when do you want those contractual guarantees to start? If you say, I want market growth, don't buy an annuity. That's easy, right? Number three is, what do annuities solve for? And it really comes down to four things, and the acronym is PIL. P stands for principal protection, I stands for income for life, L is for legacy, and the other L is for long-term care. If you do not need to solve for one of those four items contractually, then you do not need an annuity. Getting back to, there's no G, it's P-I-L-L. G stands for growth, there's no G. So MIGA would be principal protection. And then the last thing is, I really enjoyed this and I appreciate being on it. I hope I can be on again because this is a very controversial topic that shouldn't be controversial. These are contracts. But I have written seven books and published seven books. And they're easy to read, kind of like I talk, you know, very straightforward, brutal truth. I call myself the walking middle finger of annuity truth. But I'd be more than happy to send you hard copies, or you can go to Amazon and buy them. It's your call. But I'll send hard copies to say the first 100 people that email me their physical mailing address. And if you haven't caught it by now, I'm not going to chase you down and pitch you some stuff. I'm going to send you the books and leave you alone and treat you like a professional. But if you email me at stan@stantheannuityman.com, I'll send you all seven. They're easy, 60, 70 pages, easy to read on specific types. Six of them are owner's manuals. One on QLAC, SPIA, MIGA, DIA, Income Rider, and Index Annuity. Those six owner's manuals talk just about that specific product. And then my first book was The Annuity Stanifesto. Love that title, of course. And I'll send you all seven, and then we'll leave you alone. So would love to do that. And my website is stantheannuityman.com. And there's webinars and all kinds of stuff on there that you don't have to sign up for. You can just go listen and learn. But you can call me if you have any questions. I'm licensed in all 50 states. And I've been doing this a long time. I'm one of those old curmudgeons like you.
I like to call myself an optimistic cynic.
I think that's better than the walking middle finger of annuity truth. But, you know, in the world that we're in, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm screaming into a hurricane just because of the noise in the annuity industry is so misleading and so loud. Just remember that they're contracts. They're not investments.
Well, if we could find a way to buy life insurance on you, Stan, that would be a good investment, I think, the way you talk about the annuity industry.
Yeah, you know, I don't get a lot of love from them, but at the end of the day, they know I'm right.
Yeah, I have a friend who tried to spit in the face of the annuity industry, and all of a sudden he had a few lawsuits, and he was right too, but it doesn't mean it's less painful.
Well, notice I didn't mention any carrier names, right? I mean, I am a pretty smart guy, but at the end of the day, I do think education on these products needs to be a lot better from the annuity industry. I'm certainly trying to do that with my books and all the stuff that I do. But I just tell people in closing, be very careful out there. And if it sounds too good to be true, it is.
Well, I'm really glad to have you on today, Stan. This was awesome. And I'm sure the listeners are going to benefit from your wealth of knowledge that you get here. And I've been excited to have you on for a long time and definitely look forward to having you on again. I know with all the changes that go on in the industry and in financial service industry, as well as the annuity industry, it'll probably make a whole lot of sense to have you on at some future time as well. So
would love to do that anytime.
So appreciate you coming on. And definitely for listeners, we'll have all this information that Stan had told you about himself in the show notes. So if you didn't get this, you're in the car, just go to the show notes. We'll have it all there for you and you can get all this free information that he's providing.
Sounds good. Thanks so much.
Wow, that was a great interview with Stan, the Annuity Man Hathcock. Thank you for joining us this week's episode of Money Tree Investing Podcast. Since this interview went a little bit longer than expected, and it's so full of great information, we decided to turn this episode into a two-part episode. So on Monday, we're going to release the panel portion of the show for you. If you thought the interview with Stan was great, just wait to hear what the panel has to say. We have another annuity expert, and we have also a representative of the annuity industry who has her own thoughts to share. You're not going to want to miss this. We always try to give you a diversity of thought on this show because we want you to make up your own minds of what the truth is. You're going to love the discussion part of this show. I can't wait to publish it on Monday. So remember to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can also check out moneytreepodcast.com for more information in our show notes. There's a lot of great resources this week, so you're not going to want to miss the show notes. On our website, you'll have access to all our resources, show notes, archive shows, and more. Lastly, please subscribe to our show on iTunes and give us a rating as well. When you subscribe and rate the show, it allows us to get access to some of the top guests out there and guests that you're going to really want to hear. So have a great week ahead. And remember, no one will care about your money like you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.